something is trying to get inside my body, and you want to sleep with me.
We can't go to camp without our physicals now, can we?
La plume de matant.
I take great relish in savoring each separate horror. I roll them over on my tongue.
Don't, Lord Byron. Don't remind me of it tonight.
Sometimes I have wondered whether life wouldn't be much more amusing if we were all devils.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Yes, I've always dreamed of a little girl just like you.
Welcome to Screaming Queens, your favourite queer horror podcast, your only queer horror podcast. My name is Goody Bad Wife. I'm Jonathan Larkin.
I'm Jonathan Butler.
Stephen Moore.
Martin Pennetty.
And tonight we've all got together. There's four of us now, there's enough people here so we can call the corners and get some witchcraft on the go. Craft style.
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog too.
We're talking about witches. I like a witch. Do you like a witch, Marty?
I love a witch. I love a coven. I want to be in a coven.
We're in one. I personally think that witches and witchcraft have got a special place in the heart of a lot of queer people, as well as straight people, from a young age. Because I think going back to films like Wizard of Oz, and even like Snow White and stuff like that, I think they were sort of across children's entertainment from when we were kids. And you always saw that sort of marginalised, misunderstood wicked woman who was generally dressed fabulously in black and was rather fierce and wasn't the same as everyone else. So I think because of that, witches have got a bit of a special place for a queer viewer. What do you think?
And it's almost an attainable supernatural power. You don't actually have to have, you don't have to be anything strange or unusual. You can be actually an ordinary person, but you cast the runes or the spells or get the right ingredients or the right moments, and you can have power that other people don't have, or you can exercise that power.
Yeah.
For me, witches aren't even about the spells. It's all about the attitude that they represent, the kind of resonance. It's that ultimate powerful woman. And I think that way it works with gay culture as well, is because we always put powerful women at the top, because that's kind of what we see in ourselves, the femininity side of it, and relating to that. And then you've got that powerful archetype, strong female. It's like the ultimate thing that you want to reach.
They often won't be downtrodden, will they? Yeah, it's often the narrative is about them being oppressed or downtrodden or attacked in some way, and they use witchcraft to overcome or to resist it. And that's a really powerful notion, I think, if you're a gay person, or if you're just somebody who felt like an outsider, the fact that you could potentially do that and overcome bullies at school or whatever it would be, it's hugely powerful.
Well, your mother's abusive boyfriend, and you could give him a heart attack.
Yeah.
According to the craft. Is the craft a good place to start, you think?
Yeah.
I was thinking of going chronological and going back to the earlier ones, but then I thought the craft's probably quite a natural place to start. I know the craft had an effect on me as a teenager, because I remember leaving that cinema and I'd gone to see it with a bunch of girls, and we all decided that we were going to go and find books on witchcraft in Quiggins. Remember Quiggins? Was Quiggins before your time, Stephen Moore?
No. The very end of the old Quiggins.
So for people who didn't grow up in Liverpool, Quiggins was like it was a bit like Affleck's Palace in Manchester, sort of shopping emporium of independent businesses and hippies and
alternative music and art and
tattoos and all
tattoos
that stuff.
And style. Yeah.
But there was actually a witchcraft shop there, and I remember we went there like after we'd seen the craft, thinking we were going to walk into this like a magical place that was like the one in the craft with like a secret room that billows and with strange ultraviolet lights and stuff. That's more like the G-bar. But
it's the guy selling joysticks.
And yeah, it was just the guy selling joysticks and lots of pissed off goths sitting around slagging people off. That was basically it. And trying poppers for the first time and vomiting on your shoes. That was what we got instead. So the craft set me up for a big fall.
To the other kids at St. Bernard Academy, They were the girls who didn't belong.
Whatever you do, stay away from them.
Why?
They're witches.
But after years of being on the outside...
Why'd you lie about me?
I don't want to go out with you again. Please, stop begging. It's pathetic.
Four girls are about to discover the dark side.
Have you ever heard of invoking the spirit? Black magic. We can make things happen. I mean, this is it. This is real.
So yeah, rewatching this one, it just took me right back, really. And it was one of those films as well that made me just remember that there were actually cool films in the 90s. When I say cool films, I mean, you know, the way the 80s are sort of seen as the decade of cool teenage films. There were some in the 90s, and The Craft is a good example. 90s film.
It definitely felt like it was trying to catch a bit of the Freddy, the Nightmare, the scenes in the school, the way it started. It was definitely going for that, I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
I was older than you when I saw it. I saw it at the same time, but I'm 10 years older than you, so I was a teenager. And I liked it, but I remember thinking, it's not really that good, though. But rewatching it, I loved it. I love it. It's a great high school movie. There's always room for a good high school
movie. God, yeah. I loved them. So the premise of The Craft is... So it's a young girl. Is it Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll write this down. So the premise of The Craft is Sarah, who's played by Robin Tunney, who I thought was like a prototype Kristen Stewart.
Yeah. Mm.
Only she can act better than Kristen Stewart can. She moves to LA to live with her dad and a stepmom, and her mum's already dead, and she gets in with the wrong crowd, basically, at school. She sort of arrives at this new school, and it's like clueless. She's introduced to all of the sort of gangs in the school, the different tribes, and then she's sort of warned about these strange girls who all wear black and aren't popular, and they're referred to as the bitches of Eastwick. And watching it actually made me think that this was one of those films that sort of, if you went to see it as a gay boy in your teenage years, it set you up for knowing what kind of gay boy you are, because you either see the witchy gang as like, oh no, I don't want to be like that, or you see that gang and think, I want to be in that gang, so you know what sort of queen you're going to grow up to be, really.
We all wanted to be in that gang.
Did you want to be in that gang, Jonathan?
You know what, I didn't see it when I was 96, I was between 14, although I probably would have enjoyed it, but I didn't see it when I was younger. The first time I saw it was for this, so...
I
did too when I was up to house.
I would have been 6 when it came out.
I was even 14, but I still was a college.
Yeah, well, it was a 15, and it was one of those. I was 15 when it came out, so it was one of those first 15s that I got to go and see on the big screen. So New Nightmare was just before that, and then this.
But I only saw it about a year ago
for the first time. Okay.
Yeah.
And what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. It was instantly a new favorite. But then, after horror films, like I said, the kind of coming of age high school films are my second favourite genre.
Yeah.
You can't beat it. I still think Clueless is possibly one of the best films ever.
So an amalgamation of the two, like The Craft.
Yeah, you've having that, you've got both elements of everything that I love, put it together, and just have some witty one-liners and bitchiness, and it's everything you need. And actually quite intense towards the end, it gets really dramatic. Like the floating scene where she's on her toes.
But that bit where she's dragging her feet along the floor.
Yeah, that's really
everyone
intense.
Wants to do that.
That was my abiding memory from when I was 26 when I saw it, and that was what I took away from the film. I want pointy shoes. I want to drag them along some billboards and terrify somebody.
So the highlight of the film for me anyway is Fairuza Balk, who, you know, why isn't she? She hasn't really done much since The Crafts, and I don't know.
I thought towards the end it performed quite a bit hammy, I thought. Most of it was good, but towards the end when it was trying to be quite intense, I don't think she didn't really have it, I don't think.
Do you think she went a bit too far with it?
Yeah, I think so. It became a bit over the top. But she could have reined it in a bit.
She did
I bind you, Nancy.
She did that documentary Beyond Clueless, which was actually
a great film.
Great. Mm. Great. And it took me a while. I was like halfway through going, who's this voice? Like, what is it? And then it clicked and I was like, okay, I get it.
And she was in The Island of Dr. Moreau as well. Which I think was that late 90s with Val Kilmer?
Yeah, late 90s.
Yeah, but I think I saw about 10 minutes of that and didn't really like it. But she, for me, steals the show straight away. She's just got everything going for her. She's got that crazy sort of stare in her eyes, hasn't she? And she's got a dirty mouth. And she's got a little special place in my heart as well, because she was Dorothy in Return to Oz.
Hmm.
Which
I do remember that.
That scared me. That's all the time. Yeah. And I thought Skeet Ulrich, I actually liked him in this because I don't like him in Scream. I think he's a wet lettuce, but I did quite like him in there. Yeah.
He can't play as a wet lettuce, and it's once he casts the spell on him, that's what he becomes.
Cuts the balls off,
but that works.
Theresa Book's amazing. And my notes are she's the campus most wonderful thing in 90s film, which may be a bold claim, but when I was watching it this time, that's what it felt like. I think she was going for because the power of magic was corrupting her and that was sending her mad. And I loved, one of my notes is how much I loved her psychotic rage and joy because that's what it was, that's what it felt like to me. And she's got that mad mile-wide, tooth-filled grin, which just conveys utter evil and joy, and it conveys so much, it's just incredible.
She does mad really well, doesn't she? Yeah. That bit at the end where she's going off a rocket and she's tied down in the asylum. So it's really quite disturbing imagery, isn't it, for the way the film
ends? For sure. And she channels, she's really good at spite and disdain. And
I can appreciate that, Martin Kennedy.
Absolutely expert at spite and disdain.
Yeah, I love her mum as well. The woman who plays Nancy's mum is Helen Shaver. And did we go to Desert Hearts together?
No.
Desert Hearts is like an 80s film about forbidden lesbian love in the desert. And it's just amazing. It's like really, it's really romantic and campy and lots of country music and stuff. And anyway, she's in that. And so she plays the mum. And I love the bit where she gets a Connie Francis jukebox.
Yeah.
I love that. And I love the fact that Nancy has leopard print bed linen, just because I do as well. And there's only ever been two other people I've seen with leopard print bed linen, and that's Nancy and Heather Locklear in Melrose Place. So I'm in good company there.
You're a witch! They were right.
They usually are. Nancy, come on, get off the bed, let's go. She's a witch too, you know. I mean, the only reason you're in love with her is because she cast a spell on you.
No.
Yes. Sad but true. That's why I'm here. To help you forget about
it. What do you care?
Nancy, get off the bed. Look, you scared the shit out of him. Thank you very much. Let's go. No. He's gotta pay.
You're just jealous.
Jealous? Jealous? You don't even exist to me. You don't even exist. You are nothing. You are shit. You don't exist. The only way you know how to treat women is by treating them like whores when you're the whore, and that's gonna stop. Do you understand? You understand what I'm saying?
I'm sorry.
He's sorry.
So I think the problem I had with some of it was totally random, incongruous things would happen. Like, one of the first things that happens in the film is, like, a homeless guy's like, oh, I found a snake. Do you want a snake? It's like, what the fuck?
That happened? Is very
odd. It's like, what? And then she's been there a day, and in the space of a day, she's joined a coven, killed a homeless man, got a boyfriend. It's only the first day. I'm joining the gang.
Every high school film ever.
They do sort of speed everything up in high school films.
It's prom the second day. School.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
You've got to.
Yeah, I suppose.
Plus, it's LA. Everything's faster in LA. Including
it's
the
only my second favourite witch film of the 90s.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that.
And as well, they just killed somebody. And then they go to the park and have a laugh about it. It's like, well, did you just kill the man?
I think there's a bit of...
It's a bit,
they do sort of gloss over normal human reactions to things, don't they, a little bit, but then I suppose a lot of horror films do really. I quite like Neve Campbell in this.
Yes.
I really like I did too. I think if I was a 14-year-old boy seeing that, I was...
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially the bit where she gets all hot and
stuff. Yeah, when she has a sexy magic, whatever, the sexy scar magic or whatever.
Sexy scar magic.
And then she walks into the classroom and it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, 14-year-old Jonathan would have approved of that. Yeah. Definitely.
No, I can't get on board with Neve Campbell.
Well, you see, I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with her. And I've boiled it down to what really annoys me about Neve Campbell. And she does it a lot in this film. She does it, the first time she does it in this film is where Sarah has got Sarah's in class and she's got a pencil and she's levitating the pencil.
Yeah.
Neve Campbell leans over and she does this thing. You can't see me doing it, but you can hear me doing it. It's this. She does this really annoying every time she's meant to convey some sort of shock. She does it all through fucking screen 2. I can't remember screen 3, but she does it all the time and it annoys the fucker out of me. And yeah,
I don't know if I like Neve Campbell or not. I can't actually decide. It's just that she's in like films that I really really love.
Yeah.
So I'm confused whether I like her or I just think I like her because of the films she's doing, because I don't actually, she's never my standout. She's always at the bottom of the pile.
Fade towards the end. It's like about 2/3 into the film, all the other characters just kind of fade into the background. You don't really see them, do you?
It all becomes about...
Yeah, it just becomes about
Sarah and Nancy, yeah.
And I feel like she fades in practically everything she's in.
Maybe not just her.
And I think there's something about her acting that's what she does, and she really irritates me. And she's playing a tortured, wimpy burn victim.
Mm.
There just doesn't feel like there's any redeeming quality about her. There's nothing. She's just so limp.
Yeah.
And it annoys me. It really, really annoys me. And she's limp in practically everything she does.
She's a bit like overcooked broccoli.
Yes.
There's something about her I do quite like in this film, and I don't know what it is. Maybe she's a good counterpoint to the madness of Nancy. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Because I also like the other girl as well. I don't know what the
character is. Michelle. I thought it was Michelle for ages, but it's actually Rochelle.
Oh, Rochelle, yeah. Okay. I also quite like her as well.
She's the diver,
but she's a bit too old. She looks a bit old. And I also think...
like Buffy syndrome when everyone's 30.
Everyone's 30. And the bad girl as well, the bully, the racist bully.
That's Ben Stiller's wife.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, she looks too old as well.
Yeah. I don't think she's that old.
But it's one of those genuine shocker moments, though, I think, in that film, when she starts being racist and says she doesn't like Negroids and all that.
Mm.
I think that's one genuine of the film's strong points, because you're like, oh my God, you're not really expecting it to go there.
And it's quite late out of that kind of scene, like 90s, to say stuff like that was definitely out by then. Like, you could have got away with it a decade earlier, and it wouldn't have been that shocking.
Mm.
Whereas then it was like, whoa. We're meant to be out of this stuff.
If you want the audience to dislike this character, then, do a good job, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. Halfway through, it gets a bit formulaic, doesn't it? Because it sort of lines up all the reasons these girls' lives are shit. It's like one scene is Neve with a sexy scar, says John Wilson.
Sexy scar magic?
One scene is Neve with the scars, then you've got Rochelle with a racist, being racially abused. Then you've got Nancy's lechy stepdad trying to finger in the caravan. And then suddenly
there was quite a few fingering jokes, I thought, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a few.
Yeah. And then so it's all like lined up. This is the reason these girls' lives are crap, but it's all gonna change now. So it all felt a bit formulaic in that way. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I think if you're doing a teenage coming of age film, they're all gonna be formulaic. It's tried and tested, it works. And I think it's just a nice little metaphor, the whole magic of going through puberty and development as a person.
Yeah, adolescence, for sure. Yeah, and the adolescence is never easy for anyone. And it's always easy, even as a middle-aged man, it's easy to fall into the trap of wanting shortcuts to solve the problems of life.
Yeah.
And that's what's so brilliant about this film, is you get sucked into that because you think you want to be able to cast magic, be able to sort the problems of your life. And to feel better about yourself and feel better about your position in the world. But it's almost a moralistic story that you can't take those shortcuts. You have to experience life the hard way to actually get out the other end and actually become a better person. If you take shortcuts, then you're in a hide into nothing. Things will go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you make a deal with the devil, I suppose what you're trying to say.
There's going to be consequences.
Yeah.
And the formula does work. And the fact that they suddenly, when their lives start to change, it means they're going to be all sexed up. They're going to look sexy and start walking in slow motion down the school corridor.
everyone's dream.
That's like everyone's dream. It's like it's every teen high school film as well. But you can.
It's my favorite bit of every teen high school film.
I do think if I watched a film, a teen high school film, and there wasn't that scene, I'd be like, oh, I feel a bit shortchanged.
Yeah.
That's
how I walk down hallways every day. Like I'm in slow motion.
In high school.
Yeah.
It's one of the best bits of Hit Me Baby One More Time, the video where they're dancing down the corridor.
Brilliant. Very true. That's very true. Yeah.
Map and Britney was good.
Don't even start on Britney.
She's still good.
Because I will go full Nancy on your ass. So in terms of that, the actual horror elements of this film, I do think the bit where they call the corners and they invoke the spirits and all that stuff, and they wake up the next morning on the beach and all the sharks have washed up and they're dead, I think that's really creepy.
Yeah.
I think that's really eerie. I like that. And
it's totally a lot darker than you'd think it would be.
Yeah.
I really like the bit where they're on the bus. It's like the famous scene. Is there's all, watch out, there's loads of weirdos around here. It's like, we are the weirdos.
We are the weirdos.
That's such an iconic scene.
It's
I suppose.
So
that's,
iconic.
That's the high point of the film for me. Especially the mid-90s, you know, when...
If there's little glasses as well. They could just add to it perfect. It's perfect. We say, we are the weirdos, mister.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Watch out
for those weirdos. We are the weirdos, mister. Yeah, for the timing of the film, I think that was just perfect.
I totally forgot about all the fucking cockroaches.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling just
that.
Blocked that one out of memory.
Yeah, I was horrified. But yeah, I mean, in terms of 90s witch movies, I mean, it's the only one that's any good, really.
Lies.
I have to say, though, I didn't like the music in it. I thought the music was awful. There's a horrible Smiths cover that used in Charmed.
Oh, yeah, there was the Charmed theme, wasn't it?
Which, it's terrible.
In fairness, back when I watched Charmed, I didn't know who the Smiths were, and therefore I was like, oh, I like this song. And then I saw the Smiths version, and I was like, I was wrong.
That happens, doesn't it? Was Charmed before or after The Craft?
I think it was probably just after, I think.
I think it came from...
Yeah, I think The Craft.
It did. That used it first. And
that was in the middle of, like, there's loads of, like, witch stuff became popular, didn't it, around, like then. Sabrina.
Oh, Sabrina. Sabrina. Still can't watch that. It's on, like, one of the MTV channels now, isn't it? It's so good.
It was so my time. She used to get dressed in the middle and flick her fingers and she'd be in a new dress.
I can see that.
And the two aunts.
That was about mid-90s, was it, Buffy as well?
Lesbian bitches.
So it's probably all loads of stuff around that same time and probably that's where Charmed came from.
Yeah, that's true. So that was The Craft 1996.
I did feel a bit sad, though, for when the homeless guy got run over, if he still had the snake's dead as well.
Oh.
Poor snake.
What is the actual best witch film from 1990?
Hocus Pocus, by far the best.
Yeah,
terrifying.
Okay. Yeah. Well, do you know what though? We're talking campness and witches. It's got Bette Midler and Kathy Naimi together in a film as witches. So that gives it gay stripes. Definitely.
I'm not even gonna say it's a horror film, but it is a superb film.
It's with a horrific horror elements. Film.
Oh, you just came to it at the wrong time. I have watched that film about 2,000 times. I know
I've never seen it to cinema. I've only seen it when I was a kid. Did you enjoy
it?
I did enjoy it.
It's one of the best things Disney have ever done. And yet to release it under the wrong brand.
I can't really remember. I watched it a couple of times when I was younger, but I can't remember it other than me wanting it to be more violent. And
is everyone getting burnt in this film? What's going on?
Did he get burned?
I don't think so. Did he get hanged at the
start? Hanged at the beginning, isn't it?
Hanged at the start.
Yeah, hanged because it's more child friendly.
It's when Bette Midler had a contract with Disney.
Yeah.
Because she did that 1940s army.
Oh, for the boys.
For the boys. And it was very Disney 90s schmaltz. It was sanitised, Bette Midler. And I saw Hocus Pocus at the pictures. And it's an okay film. It's not. I don't think it's a brilliant film, but it's an alright kids film. There are better kids films.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think there's lots of kids films that are straight into horror that are actually fucking brilliant. You know, like Paranorman and things like that.
I think
glossed over, really.
It's one of them, though, isn't it? This one hit me at the right time.
It
terminated through my childhood and has stuck with me, so therefore it has a lot more of a meaning to me than it's going to be to anyone else when it doesn't hit you at that time.
Yeah, I suppose.
And it's still got a big big cult following. It's
well, it has,
one
yeah.
One of the biggest. Disney still won't release merchandise for it.
They keep trolling people, don't do it like, oh, we're gonna do a sequel, and then it ends up being fake. And
yeah, she's finally said that she's definitely not going to happen, even though she wants to. But she did perform it live, and I got to see that.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest
well,
moment
we have
of my life.
Well, we had the same
concert
down in
Manchester.
Yeah. Oh, right, yeah. Okay.
It was the greatest moment
of my life. You see, as I was sitting there thinking, she fucking didn't do Dolores del Lago, but she did this.
It was fucking brilliant.
But
I had to get my mum to record it on my phone for me because I was too busy like screaming and dancing like a lunatic.
I put a spell on you. But anything that Bette Midler does, I'll watch and I love it. And she, you know, ultimate gay icon. But yeah, for me, it just, maybe it wasn't the right time and maybe I was a bit too old or a bit too jaded. I mean, by at that point, was I what, 50? When did it come out?
It would have been around.
It was
93
or something.
I thought it was about 96, about the same time as
that one. I'm sure that I still didn't watch it when it came out. I watched that one a bit.
Maybe not.
To the internet.
Glorious little life.
I've got my
list. Just do some fact checking.
I've got my list. Oh, 93. I was only 12.
I was free.
But come looking at that, when I was 12, I was watching Hellraiser.
Yeah, just easy well.
So it's a different...
That's been, so I think I must have come to it when I was about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And I was drunk.
And Martin was drunk. Martin was babysitting me. Or he should have been. But he was making love with the other camp counselor and I was drowning in the lake. So yeah, Hocus Pocus divides the table.
To Stephen and the rest.
No, but you know, if you're talking about camp witch films, then you can't not talk about Hocus Pocus.
So apparently I'm a witch. Girls need to learn to fight. When witches don't fight, we burn. You have genuine power.
Yeah, nature.
It is something you need to learn how to control.
We take the best boy parts and we build the perfect boyfriend.
Idiots. The only thing you have to be afraid of.
So, it's been a while since I watched American Horror Story.
Yeah, I watched it when it was on. And watched it weekly as it came out, so it's been a while since I've seen it.
I remember being really excited about it.
Yeah, I liked it when it started. It's a bit reminds of The Beyond, like, because the same setting, isn't it? You know,
New
Orleans, isn't it? All the houses with all the palm trees, all the, whatever you call them, in the front. And it looked a bit like The Beyond, so I liked a lot of that. And it was quite gory as well. It was quite gory, and there were zombies, and it was like, oh, I like this. This is good.
Yeah, I mean, it went there, didn't it? Wasn't there the guy with the bull head raping people and stuff,
mm-hmm.
which you know we love. But Jessica Lange and Kathy Bates and all of these fabulous women.
Kathy Bates was brilliant in that one. I think that's probably the best one she's been.
She played a nasty character, and
yeah.
She was like
yeah.
A
Kathy Bates is by far her best appearance in the show ever, and one of the best in this season.
She's great, isn't she?
That's the eunuch as well.
Superb.
Yeah,
Frances Conroy was my highlight of this.
Yeah.
Like, this entire season for me was Frances Conroy.
Yeah.
Just the fashion that she had the entire way through it. Just like every time she was on screen with like a mustard glove. So I was just like, I'm in love.
She was kind of based on, what's her name? Is it Grace Coddington? And she was fabulous. There were lots of really good things about this show. There were like Angela Bassett as the voodoo priestess was hilarious as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're talking camp, if you're looking for something camp about witches to watch, then American Horror Story is the place to look. But like all the seasons of American Horror Story, it just sort of seemed to stretch something that was quite thin to begin with over too many episodes, and it kind of petered out for me.
What was about 10 episodes, is it? They could have done with shortener. Make it about 8.
I think it's like 12.
12.
Yeah, it's 12.
It didn't go far. I don't think it went far enough. From what I remember,
it
sort of lost momentum. And I've enjoyed a lot of the series of American Horror Story, but that one really disappointed me. Yeah, looking at clips preparing for this, there's lots, it's replete with massively camp moments and just absolutely amazing. And one of my favourites, is it Frances Conroy? It's Myrtle Snow with the red hair and she's been sentenced to death for murdering two of the council. And she's being burned to death. And she says, and what are your last words? Balenciaga! What? There's just nothing better.
In the absence of the council, as reigning supreme of this coven, I hereby decree, for the murders of our sister witch, Cicely Pembroke, and our colleague, Quentin Fleming, you
Myrtle Snow, are hereby sentenced to death by fire.
Dear, my sweet daughter, I've never been more proud.
Any last words?
Only one.
That's the iconic, I think, the best, and I love, and I still use it all the time, it's Fancy Crew when she goes, don't be a hater, dear.
And isn't Leslie Jordan in it as well? The little guy from Willie.
Yes, he gets murdered. He's one of the council members.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's so, dead country.
So it has got a great cast. I mean, it was sort of a, it's very similar to Scream Queens as well, isn't it? Emma Roberts basically plays the same character in both.
It's actually Emma Roberts' best role, even though it's the exact same role that she's done in everything else. It's the one where she does her best.
She's good, and I've got a thing for Evan Peters as well.
But he's really underused in the series.
Yeah, but he's naked a lot.
Yeah, true. Ernest Pence.
That's
not where he gets brought back to life. He's a zombie.
It's like pieced back together.
But yeah, she fancies him, so she doesn't want to die, so she brings him back to life. So
yeah.
My favourite actress in all of American Horror Story is Jamie Brewer, the girl with Down syndrome. She's so criminally underappreciated. She's always hilarious and witty. The first season when she goes Halloween with him, and she dresses as a pretty girl, a normal girl.
I want to be a pretty girl.
My heart broke with that, and I still love her. She gets
hit by a car.
But in this one, she's great again. She's reading everyone's minds, and then I love the bit where she ends up dying, and they go, "Oh, she was good. Was she innocent? Well, she killed a next door neighbor, but that bitch had it coming."
She's a great ballsy actress. She's good.
My favorite's Lily Rabe, I think.
Yeah.
And she plays Stevie Nicks, doesn't she, in this series?
Which is weird to bring Stevie Nicks in.
And then they brought Stevie Nicks in. Which is one of those moments, isn't it? I do appreciate the campness of it, but it just was like...
Do we need an entire performance of Seven Wonders, like the entire song?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, as much as I love it, and as much as I think Stevie Nicks is.
It was almost like a music video in the last episode, didn't it? She was sitting at the piano playing it.
And then walking around the house, swishing around the house.
Why they just felt the need to use a fisheye lens on that entire season, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just looked weird the entire time. It was like, I think you're trying to do it otherworldly, but
it was meant to be dreamy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just like, just fix the camera lens, you mings.
Yeah. I remember there was a strange storyline running through it as well. Was there someone who was an assassin?
There was.
He was trying to kill
the witch hunters.
Sarah Paulson wasn't trying to kill her because did she get acid in the face?
That's right.
Yeah.
The witch hunters, and I hated Jessica Lange's storyline with the Axeman, and he was going to run away with the serial killer.
Danny Houston, wasn't it? The saxophone player.
Yeah.
And you have to play jazz on Halloween or he'll kill you.
Yeah.
I thought that was probably close to being the best one, but I just thought towards the end it was really strong until the very last episode, and I think it lost it.
I think he made the right decision with the conclusion.
I can't even say, I don't even remember.
It was Sarah Paulson ended up being the next Supreme.
Right.
Instead of one of the people that they had to put forward for it.
Yeah.
I think if you chose one of the other ones, you would have divided people up too much.
Yeah.
But it was like, you had all this filler episode, and then all the important stuff happened one episode at the very end, and it was just...
Because Lily Rabe's character just, evaporated.
Evaporated.
So they built up this character all for the whole season, and then the end... Oh, no.
She literally evaporated in two seconds.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But yeah, and I like the fact that they were all looking for the next Supreme. Although I thought they should have just gotten the whole hog and brought Diana Ross in.
Was she a Supreme or was it her and the Supremes?
She was a Supreme.
And then much like Destiny's Child, and then it became Destiny's Child, and then on the track listing it used to say featuring Beyonce.
Oh, it's Beyonce.
I didn't even know that.
Beyonce
features
nobody.
Like Pussycat Dolls.
Shirtlifter.
Yes. At the Super Bowl, it was Beyonce and two backing dancers with the mics turned off.
Basically, yeah. That was the whole career of Destiny's Child. Anyway, we digress to things that are even more camp than American Horror Story. So, I'd say if you're looking for something camp and fun and light to watch about witches... It's a really good laugh, but it just wasn't, it wasn't remotely scary, and
it was where American Horror Story lost the horror.
Yeah. I think when they say good black don't crack, they're not wrong. What's your secret?
What's yours? Your manicure costs more than my rent. Woman like you wipes her ass with diamonds. She don't just end up walking in here for hair extensions.
My, my, my. Aren't you perceptive?
You know exactly who I am and what I'm capable of. Just like I know exactly what you are. Witch. I can smell the stink of it on you.
Yeah, I think that the last season, I didn't even realise I'd watched the last episode. I watched an episode and there wasn't even a conclusion. I tuned in next week and there was not enough. It's like, oh, that was the finale of the hotel. I was like, what?
I haven't actually even finished the hotel.
I got to episode 9, I think.
Never, I was appreciating Gaga.
Maybe you did. Maybe you did see the end and you just didn't realise.
Maybe
you
did.
Yeah. It was. I was like...
What? It just had a cool vampiric bisexual foursome love scene and I was so game for that, and then after that I just kind of got bored.
I think it was like a 12-hour Lady Gaga music video, which is fine, but don't try and call it a horror scene.
I like to say a couple of bits in it, but that was so little used,
and it was just ripped off from every other serial killer film,
wasn't it? Well, they all get together and have a dinner party. That was quite good.
Oh, I didn't like that episode.
No, you hated that, didn't you? I lost me that one.
Liz Taylor. Can't forget Liz Taylor.
He was the best thing.
By far the best thing. And even when he went to the premiere, he wore the heels of the suit. Yeah. I love him.
Yeah, he's great. What's his name?
Dennis O'Hara.
Yeah. You've heard of the Blair Witch several times.
I was laying down on the leaves, a pile of leaves, kind of watching my pool and looking up at the sky.
Have you ever heard of the Blair Witch?
And all of a sudden, I felt like something was near me.
Right.
You know, kind of an eerie feeling.
So we're talking about the Blair Witch. 1999 came along and blew everything out the water, really, didn't it? It was sort of genius marketing.
I think the marketing is the strongest bit of this film.
It was very strong. And wasn't it the biggest grossing film?
Up until very recently, yeah. It was the biggest per budget, the most profitable film. It was like $80,000 or something, I think it cost, and it made millions.
That is amazing.
It's only Paranormal Activity that's beat, I think you were saying.
Yeah, Paranormal Activity is the biggest
one. That cost like $12,000 and made millions.
Yeah.
So both the same.
Yeah. Tennis.
It's probably unlikely you don't know what happens in the Blair Witch, but basically the story is Heather and her two friends are going to make a student film looking at urban myths and folklore, and they decide to go to the town of Blair.
Birkettville.
Used to be called Blair.
Tenay Blair.
To talk about the legend of the Blair Witch. So they go to this town, interview a lot of local characters, and then the plan is to go into the woods and follow the Blair Witch Trail, basically, which is just to the different locations where things allegedly happened. But obviously they start to get lost, things start to go bump in the night, and they end up falling victim to the Blair Witch, and there's lots of snot and tents and twigs.
And nothing. It wasn't a film that I've ever really appreciated. I never got it at the time, and I don't really get it now. I don't get what the hype is. And it's the exact same with Paranormal Activity. Like, there's a lot of people really got into it and fell for it, and there's a lot of backstories. Now they do, like, dossiers and stuff like that, that people buy to, like, with fake background on it.
I think that was
one of the extreme.
It's one of the first films that really had, like, the viral marketing and stuff, really, didn't it?
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams and all people like that use it a lot in theirs, and I remember Cloverfield had huge like viral marketing for that, but it was Blair Witch that started it all, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Nobody really used the internet in some ways that much at that point, and I think the Blair Witch really inspired people to use the internet because it relied on it so much in the run up to the release of the film, and afterwards people were so intrigued by it.
Yeah. I don't think I had the internet when I saw that. It was about 99. Yeah. I would have been like 16, 17.
Yeah,
so yeah,
yeah. I don't think I did.
I didn't have the internet. No. We had the internet at work.
Yeah, I did.
I used to go into school to print something out or go on the internet.
But with this film, I think the strong point for me is all before it happens. So, like, I like the interviewing with the locals and all that, and kind of getting the backstory. It leads you up quite nicely.
I made the same note. This film's proof that the build up is much more enjoyable.
One of the women in the interview, I had to rewind it a few times because it sounds like she says, two men were out cunting. And I was like, what? Have you heard it? And because it's a woman, there's a woman who's stood there holding a baby and she's talking about men going out hunting. And I'm assuming she must say hunting, but it definitely sounds like she says hunting.
Yeah.
The creepiest, the creepiest story about her that I ever heard was that two men were out hunting.
Uh-huh.
And they were camped near the cabin or something that she's supposed to haunt.
No, uh-huh.
And they disappeared off the face of the earth.
No. Really?
Okay, it's all right, Ingrid. I'm just telling a scary story, but it's not true.
It's not true.
I wasn't there, so it was definitely hunting.
They do a really good job. Actually, I think those people all seem like real people.
Yeah.
Well, some of them were.
I think, yeah, they mixed
some of them were actual residents of the town where they filmed.
They mixed in actors with genuine people that they asked. And I think the people they asked were kind of like, it's that kind of like, if you ask someone something and they don't really know about it, they'll just make something up to go along with what you're asking.
I'd say, right.
You wanted genuine reactions to, oh, have you heard about this? All those people have. I didn't know that.
That makes it better. I think it worked because when people went into the pictures, it was still a lot of people still unsure whether it was a documentary or a film. And I think that was the biggest success because people were genuinely scared of coming out to work.
I think they did. I think just as it came out of the premiere, they announced it that it was fake.
I didn't see how you couldn't have seen it coming.
Yeah.
See, I you're all very cynical.
No, I don't mind.
I really enjoy Blair Witch. No. I've only watched it 3 times. I watched it in the cinema.
Yeah.
I bought it on DVD for £4 in some shop and watched it when I got it.
Yeah.
And then I watched it in preparation for this podcast.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed
it. And I think it's a film that once you've seen, there isn't actually any need for you to ever watch it again, to be honest.
Yeah. Mm.
But I think it's a really good... I think it's a really... effective.
Yeah.
It's a spooky film.
It is spooky.
It's got I think the ending is really disturbing and it links back to some of that backstory.
Yeah.
And it's very and it's quite ambiguous and that makes it even more disturbing. What doesn't work in the film is the relationship between the three characters. Because they're not actually it's not actually clear that they're good friends.
No.
Mm. And if they're not good friends, why would they be going on this trip and doing this project?
Yeah.
But their relationship, they sort of play it both ways, like they're not close friends, but they are.
Yeah.
And then their relationship breaks down incredibly quickly.
Everything happens really quick. It's sort of sped up.
There is... I mean, it would be bait for a useless film. But why they don't just, once they find water, follow the flow of the water, I don't know. They don't need to actually feel like they're disorientated or lost at all if they just follow the flow of the river.
I always think, why doesn't one of them climb to the top of a tree and look out over the woods and they'll be able to see
where there's civilization over there?
Yeah. Witch over there, town over there. Let's go that way.
One of my notes was this film couldn't happen now because you'd someone just get out the phone.
Oh, I
know. Yeah, get signal in the forest.
There'd be some form.
That's why you avoid outdoors at all costs.
Yeah.
One of the key moments of the film is where one of the lads has got rid of the map, which exacerbates them being lost.
Yeah.
And I always think there's something there that they could have made more of.
Yeah.
That's not a logical thing for anybody to do, even if they don't like anybody.
Yeah.
But was there an intention that actually they were being influenced by some other more insidious spirit of the forest to do strange things?
That could have been
something like, they could have used.
Yeah, like the witch was turning them against each other.
I thought that was what they were doing. I thought it was meant to be ambiguous.
I suppose, it's getting worse and worse as the film goes along. Maybe the first night is just like stones, and then it's the kids, and then in the end it's the tents
again. The sound effects are brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, the benefit of watching with in surround sound as well, I had a speaker right next to me here. So the sounds of the kids playing outside and all that, I thought that
which
was...
Which is creepy. That was
really eerie, and then when they discover the house at the end, that is really scary, the bloody handprints on the walls and all that sorts of stuff. But I do prefer the build up to the payoff.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that bit where they're talking to people in the town, there's a palpable fear there. We know when everyone's got that kind of local myth that they know from where they grew up, where it was like, oh, don't go to that house or don't go in the woods because that happened there, that feels very real to me.
I did think though, I did, at the end, and I didn't like it at all. I think it was just wrong. But when I was thinking about it, I thought, I don't think there's actually an ending that would have worked. I think they'd built themselves into a corner. Because, literally, because it was like, if they'd showed me a witch, I would have been like, fuck no, this film's over. But if they, where else could you have gone with that acting? It was like, you had to show just a bit of weirdness and then camera dies.
I think the letting the tension and the atmosphere be the end, and aren't they really? Because you know what's going to happen, so you can fill in the rest yourself.
Yeah.
If you want to imagine this really horrible witch, you can. Or if you want to imagine the spirit of a serial killer. Or...
I like
but
that.
But
the witch is almost a red herring.
Yeah.
Because one of the backstories is a serial killer.
Yeah, child killer in the winter.
Takes you and your mate and has you face a corner and kills your mate behind you and then kills you. And that's exactly what they replicate at the end. And so it's almost actually, the witch is a myth.
Yeah.
There is no witch. There is nothing going on, but there is something much more sinister going on. And so I enjoy that. I enjoy that.
I like the end, and I find it really eerie and it is quite disturbing. I like the descriptions of the witch as well, which is, I said, about his covered in hair.
Well, they released an official, like a figure, didn't they? I think McFarlane Toys who did all,
really?
They do all like Leatherface and Jason and Freddy,
yeah.
And they released an official. They got it signed off by the company to this is canon. Which is going to be like.
This is what she looks like.
Yeah.
And the girl who disappears in the forest in the 19th century and then comes back, and all she can talk about is the woman whose feet didn't touch the woman in the forest whose feet didn't touch the ground, and that's a really rich image, just simple but actually terrifying.
One thing I got from it watching this again that I didn't really get from the first time, I don't know if it was just something I didn't pick up, but when they talk about the coffin rock where they had all the bodies were like strapped together to make a structure, and is that supposed to be about the twigs? Because you see the twigs hanging in the trees and it's like five sticks into a shape, and it's like, is that what they're supposed to have seen? Because they talk about them like all being bloody and tied together, and I was like, that's creepy.
I immediately thought human
centipede. Well, maybe,
you always go there. Looking at the stuff with the twigs and that made me think of how influential the film's been and what a big cultural impact that's had, because there's times now when I've heard people say, you know, like if you go garden shopping and you're going to pick something up for your garden, you go, oh, that looks a bit Blair Witch, you know. It's become part of the sort of vernacular, I suppose. It's entered into popular culture, I think, Blair Witch Project, definitely. Whether people like it or not,
it's definitely still in my...
We have done that with fortune chillers. They get willow sticks, so it's like a stick and they chew it up and then whittle it down, and then I came down one day and he's whittled it into like this little weird structure that looked like the stick man from the Blair Witch, and I was like,
ooh,
what's going on?
Wow.
I don't
like this. Don't
chill, and there was one of my hairs wrapped around it. I was like, what are you doing? Don't like this.
I like these chinchillas.
Yeah.
Is this some sort of chinchilla voodoo that we don't know about?
Wow.
But yeah.
Chinchilla with an E-R. But I like it. I think, even I know what you mean about once you've seen it, you don't need to see it again, but I think I did get more from it than
I did. This was probably the third or fourth time I've seen it, and I definitely got a lot more.
Yeah.
In the pictures, I kind of the ending, because it was, there was hype behind it was so much, and then the pictures were really busy, and then you saw that ending, and it was a bit deflating, and some people were laughing, and it was like, But then when you watch it again by yourself, and you can get more from it, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't rewatch for this, because I did the exact what you just said. I felt like I did not need to see that film again. Maybe I should have. Maybe I would have appreciated it.
Yeah, maybe give another look. I mean,
I
did really enjoy it. I forgot how annoying they all were as well.
Yeah,
when they all start screaming and the snot. The bit where one of the characters, Josh, where he disappears and he's gone. I was relieved. I thought, good, one of them is gone, because they're really fucking annoying me.
One of my notes as well was, it looks like they've stumbled across a folk art exhibition. They're going to be attacked by hipsters any second.
Yeah.
Or hippies.
Sefton Park artisan exhibition. In the Palm House. But that was 1999, so that actually rounded off the '90s on high note with witches, didn't it?
Yeah.
That's the end of our first witching hour. It would have been a witching 2 or 3 hours, so we've decided to cut it into two. Please join us next time to hear more from us. If you'd like to leave us a review on iTunes, that'd be great. Or you can email us at screamerqueens@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. We'll see you next time.